Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here. And when I think of flat tops,
exactly,
I think of Marines.
Yeah.
And of course, we have plenty of those in the federal government. And we have a number of retired, no longer active duty Marines. There's no such thing as a former Marine.
Exactly. An ex-Marine. Former, but not ex.
Yeah.
Right.
We have a number of them in the civil service. But that's not what you're getting at.
No, and it's funny that you'd come at it from that direction, because from a generational thing, when I think of flat top, I think of the haircut that half the guys in America had at one time.
Uh-huh.
You know, that or a crew cut, and or aircraft carrier, I think comes to mind.
Oh, yes,
for people.
Yes.
But yeah, bottom line, this is none of the above.
This ain't that.
This ain't that.
You're writing about the issue of pay, and we've been talking about that throughout the course of the week. Tell me what you're getting at here with flat tops.
Well, the pay cap, I tried to approach it in a sort of lighthearted vein, because it's a serious subject, but, you know, pose the question, how do you tell the difference between a GS-15, a longtime GS-15 from San Francisco, and a longtime GS-15 from, say, Huntsville, Alabama, or Washington, D.C.?
The cut of their suits?
No, it's not that. It's not their style or deportment. It's, many people say the San Franciscan will be slightly shorter and his head will be flattened for years of bumping up against the pay ceiling.
Ah.
So there you go. There's the pay cap, is more popularly called.
Yes.
And federal pay at the GS levels is capped at $157,100 per year.
To be
now,
specific.
That ain't bad.
Yeah.
But a lot of people would take that.
Yeah.
But in fact, because of pay raises that they should have gotten by law but have been denied by this artificial pay cap. It's artificial, but it's very real.
Mm-hmm.
People in San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland should be making about $19,000 a year more than they are being paid because of this pay cap. The cap it's toughest in those cities. Next is Los Angeles and Houston, where people have higher salaries in every grade. And then you have D.C., Chicago, and Boston. The GS, the cap there is at the ninth step of the pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
But it's every year that there is a federal pay raise that the GS-15s remain at this 157-100 cap, more and more people bump up against the ceiling. And it's becoming a problem, a retention problem. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't think about is they think about money that's being denied them now. Imagine if you should be paid $19,000 a year more than you're actually getting.
Mm-hmm.
That would, you probably think about that a couple times a day.
You know?
But more than that, when you retire, you know, the high three, what does that do to your high three average salary? And it does a tremendous amount to it. And when you go into retirement, you want all the money you can have. And I talked with Carol Bonacero about it. I talked with Pat Niehaus Wednesday on the radio show. And they say it is becoming a problem. It's a disincentive for people to move up. Why move up into a GS-15 job, which can carry a tremendous amount of responsibility and lots more unpaid hours of overtime and whatnot, when you're not going to be compensated for it?
I'm doing some quick calculations here. And based on what you told me, it would turn your high three from 157-100, 157-100, 157-100, to 157-100, 176-100, 177-861.
Okay.
And so when that becomes your high three, wow, that does make a big
difference
for the whole rest of your life.
Absolutely, big difference, yeah.
What I think is maybe the opposite side of this coin is that as Congress looks at issues like this and thinks about what they've been trying to do to slow the growth of the amount of money they're spending on pensions, this probably isn't something that's likely to change anytime soon for the reason that I just laid out there. You know, that's just one person who's going to collect a significantly higher pension for the rest of his or her life times the 2 million people that are in the federal government now. Now, I know not all 2 million will be subject to this, but even if you look at the people that are 15s, I mean, this would have to impact the SES too, and so there are a lot of ramifications here.
Yeah, and you know, one of the problems you've got too is I don't know when this happened, but some years ago, 4 or 5, maybe even 10 years ago, Congress went to becoming a majority of millionaires. in the House and the Senate. And whether it was by marriage, whether it was by hard work, whether it was by inheritance, they are millionaires. CBS in 2011 did a study and found that 20% of the House freshmen were living at their office, living, sleeping, showering, eating at their office. These are the people that gave us and the White House. These are the people that gave us the government shutdown, which nobody said would happen, and it did. They gave us sequestration, which nobody said would happen, and it did. But these people, it seems to me, are either by finances or by isolation, are totally divorced from reality. Mm-hmm. You know, this freshman class in the House, most of those, well, none of them had been around for the shutdown of 1995-96. And those of us who were around remember it, and there's a reason it didn't happen again for another 15, 16 years, because nobody wanted it to happen. But people forgot how that played out and how, right or wrong, the Republicans lost the public relations battle. You know, Newt Gingrich left, Bill Clinton stayed, despite problems.
Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and your flat tops of the civil service column is on federalnewsradio.com right now. Also, I wanted to mention another column you've got up, Dead Feds with Credit Cards.
Yeah.
And this is a classic case of lessons not learned.
Exactly.
I mean, stupidity is the only word I can think of.
I don't know what P.T. Barnum, whoever said there's a sucker born every day, and it is more than true, things that we all think we learn of as children, and yet people repeat these same mistakes. And every couple of years, we have some news media or the inspectors general or the government accountability office. Somebody comes up with a report of feds on a streak at Las Vegas. In this case, it was a federal worker in at a casino in West Virginia, who got over a period of time, got a huge line of credit, something like $150,000. And he's using his government credit card. And if you walked into Hollywood, turned in a screenplay and said, here's the premise. Six people are going to go to a strip joint and spend $200,000. Hollywood would throw it out.
They say it's too ridiculous.
Yeah. And yet it happens every day.
I read your column and I thought of what I think is the funniest television commercial in the history of television. It's for A&W Root Beer, and you can find it if you go on YouTube. Maybe we'll link to it later. Okay. At federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This guy is kind of heavyset guy is sitting in this guy's office, and the punchline is the guy who he is interviewing with for a job is named Dumass, but it's not pronounced the way that you would, except the guy that was interviewing didn't know
Alexander
that.
Dumas.
Yeah, the name is Dumas. The column is on Dead Feds with Credit Cards is up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, too. Part of the onus here, though, is on the agencies for not doing a better job than they should at keeping track, especially on the dead one. I mean,
yeah.
If you've passed away, you probably there should be some way to figure that out.
Well, they certainly should have a limit on the amount of money they can charge.
Right.
Yeah, there were 53 people who were dead, and this was at the Postal Service. But to their credit, the Postal Service did catch it. The IG caught it. You know, and as far as we know, none of them did spend any money, or nobody bought things in their name. But it's a problem, and it's interesting. Some of the feedback I got from this was interesting, and a guy reminded me that when this program started, it was Diners Club. That was a big company,
uh-huh.
And the GSA gave them the contract for a couple hundred thousand federal workers. And it really was kind of the making of them. And then they renewed it, and there were all kinds of problems with it. But the government wouldn't accept any expenses unless they were charged on the Diners Club card.
Uh-huh.
So you couldn't pay it out of pocket or use your own credit card and then get reimbursed by the government. They just wouldn't accept it. They were really forcing this for reasons nobody's quite sure of. And it grew to now is there's several million people, and they have to have it. They are required to have one of these cards. They maybe don't want it, and their finances may be in good shape. But you hear all of these anecdotal stories. I heard one, and I can't track it down, but this was probably 10 years ago. Supposedly a woman in a federal agency bought a car with their government credit card. I mean, like, what are they thinking?
Yeah. I wonder if anybody still has a Diners Club card.
I meant to look at logos yesterday when I went out to see if it's still around. Because at one point, I think it was part of Citicorp.